guys, and welcome to the Moms and Murder podcast, a true crime podcast featuring myself, Mandy, and my dear friend, Melissa. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Mandy. How are you?
Doing good. How about you?
Good. I think we have this intro down.
We do. It's always the same.
You and we're always doing old. Good.
Yeah. That's well, nice. I always change it up. You never know if I'm going to call you old, if I'm going to call you dear, or any other number.
Dear old hag. That's what I'm waiting for. My dear old hag, Melissa.
I'll make sure to throw that one in the mix.
Perfect. Couple quick announcements. We kind of have our Threadless store on pause for now. We're trying to merge stuff over. And we finally realized, hey, Mandy creates all of our posters for the show. Why aren't we making Mandy make our designs for t-shirts and stuff? So she's trying to get the creative juices flowing. I hate that term.
I hate that term too, yeah.
But that's what we're doing. And then we're going to try and merge our shop into another one. Turns out it takes a lot of time. Turns out we don't have a whole lot of time.
Right.
So we're moving at the speed of
a snail?
I mean, something slower than a snail. Yeah. Something barely alive.
Slug?
Something, whatever's on life support is what we're moving at the speed of. We also have our Patreon account, patreon.com/momsandmurderpodcast. If you want to hear some bonus episodes, we'll have a new one up for this month, hopefully in the next week or two. The last one we did, we recorded two times. Both times the audio crapped out at us. But guess what? We had the Patreon funds to buy a new mic. So yay. All come full circle.
Yes.
So thank you guys so much for supporting us. We really do appreciate it. And we are going to kick the night off with a it's daytime. It's mid-afternoon, but we're kicking this portion of our day off. Mandy, what is today's episode about?
Today's episode is going to be about Zeb Quinn, a teenager who kind of mysteriously vanished in the Asheville and North Carolina area. So, as I said, Zeb was 18. He was born on May 12, 1981. He was the second child born to his mother, Denise, and he became the new best friend to his sister, Brandy, who was just a little more than a year older than him. Growing up, Denise described Zeb as being shy and sweet and what some people may call awkward. He was a bit smaller than the other kids, and he struggled in reading comprehension, which, honestly, being smaller than other kids and kind of just having his own learning style really reminds me a lot of my oldest son.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with him. He is a joy and a delight. But that's what – whenever I was listening to Denise talk about her son, it kind of reminded me a lot of the way my son is. So yeah. I kind of related to that a little bit on a motherly type of level with having a kid that was kind of like that. So in high school, Zeb was kind to everyone he met, and he joined the ROTC program at the school. And he aspired to be in the military, but he really took ROTC very, very seriously. He was very passionate and dedicated to that, wanted to use it as a jumping off point for his possible lifetime career of being in the military. In addition, Zeb was also a hard worker, and he took a job at a local Walmart in the electronics department. He was just a part-time employee, but he would often work extra hours, and a lot of times it would add up to like full-time work. That's what his mom said. He was a part-time worker with full-time hours. So he would take on all these extra shifts and kind of sometimes would work as many as 40 hours a week, even though he was still in high school and had all these other things going on. So he was a very hard worker.
At 18 years old, Zeb had saved up enough money to buy himself a newer car. He had been driving an old Mazda Protege, but he had his sights set on a Mitsubishi Eclipse. A friend and coworker named Robert Jason Owens had told Zeb about an Eclipse for sale in another town and had offered to come along with Zeb to check it out. One night after Zeb's shift at Walmart, Zeb and Jason set out to do just that. The two were seen by fellow coworkers in the parking lot, getting to their own separate cars and driving off with Zeb following Jason. It was 9:15 p.m. when the teens pulled into a gas station and could be seen on surveillance footage entering the store to purchase some sodas before returning to their cars and pulling off again.
While following Jason, Zeb received a page on his pager from an unknown number. And guys, I had to go back and look.
Did you not know what a pager was?
No, I knew what a pager was. But I guess, you know, it's one of those things where I was thinking as I was reading it, I was like, what year was this in?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I read that it was in 2000. And I guess, like, when you think of the year 2000, it feels like it wasn't that long ago. But
the year 2000.
It was.
That's a Conan O'Brien reference that Mandy did not get.
It just went over my head. I'm giggling and just pretending like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. But no, you know what I mean, though, when people say whenever they talk about even like 2003 or 2004 and you're like, well, that was just a few years ago. Then you realize quickly that, like,
when you do
no.
the math, like, whoa, that was almost two decades ago.
Yeah, that was a very long time ago. So I was taken aback by the pager thing just because I guess it's just hard to imagine, like, you
a
know.
World with pagers.
Without smartphones, you know, even though, you know, it,
You're such a millennial.
I know. It's the worst. It's the worst.
It is.
So according to Zeb's family, the best way to reach him was to, on that pager of his, and he would always return the calls just a short time later. So when this page came in, Zeb flashed his lights at Jason to signal that he needed to pull over. So once they were on the side of the road, Zeb went up to Jason's window to ask if he could borrow his cell phone, but Jason told Zeb that he did not have a phone and suggested that Zeb could possibly just drive up the road a little ways, maybe back towards that gas station they came from, and look for a payphone.
Which you could not do now.
No.
You would be driving to Mexico to find a payphone.
No, there's no such – I mean
– Are there payphones?
I don't think so.
No.
I honestly don't think so. Maybe
– What would Superman do? If
fly
now
there?
No, Superman used to go into a phone booth to change into his clothes to save the world. Like, what does Superman do in these new comics? This is a real problem. I don't even like comic books. Just go.
So Zeb got back in his car and he was going to go do just find, you know, just that, find a phone that he could use to return this page that he had gotten that he didn't know who it was from, and told Jason to just stay there on the side of the road and that he would be right back. So 15 minutes passed and Zeb came speeding back up to Jason's truck. He was so flustered that he accidentally rear-ended Jason as he was approaching from behind, you know, to return. And he told Jason that he really had to go. He had to bail out on this plan to go look for a new car. That something had come up. Jason said he was really agitated and frantic and just said that he had to go. So according to Jason, this was the last time he saw Zeb. And Zeb just got in his car and drove away.
Earlier in the night at around 9 p.m. when Zeb's shift at work was ending, Zeb's mother sent a page trying to get a hold of Zeb to see if he wanted to get a late dinner with her. Zeb did not respond to this page, but his mother assumed that he was working extra hours again and possibly didn't see the page or wasn't able to call her right away. She went home and had dinner with her boyfriend instead of waiting, and she paged him again later in the evening. When Zeb failed to return the call again, his mother Denise began to worry and started frantically calling around, asking friends if they had seen or heard from Zeb. The night went on, and Zeb's mother barely slept even though she tried. She said she woke up every hour or so, would send another page, and then tried to get some rest.
I cannot imagine. I get panicked if I just can't get a hold of my husband, you know, if he's either, I mean, the one story that you know of that I can think of that, you know, the feeling you get. My husband was on a road trip with his boss. They were going back and forth to Miami, and my husband's phone actually died, and he didn't bring a charger. Don't know why, but he didn't have a cell phone charger. So his phone died. And so I knew they were on this long drive back on highways and stuff. And like all of a sudden I realized like he wasn't returning my text. And then I would try to call him and it would go straight to his voicemail. So I can just really relate to that panicked feeling that you get like when you can't get a hold of somebody and you should be able to get a hold of them.
Right.
So I just cannot imagine, you know, his poor mother all through the night and keep waking up and realizing that he hasn't returned the call and he hasn't come back home and you don't know where he is and it's out of character. I honestly can't imagine any more of like just a panicked feeling that you would have.
And the second you call the police, it's real. You know what I mean?
Right.
Until then, you can kind of tell yourself
it's something else.
Mm-hmm. Like he's doing something or he's not getting my pages. And the second you make that transition from just talking yourself through it to making a phone call, it's real. So
yeah.
I can see where you're just like, I'm just going to keep trying. I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to keep trying with an 18-year-old.
Right.
Obviously small kid, it's different. So at first I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she made it through the night. But then I do get that kind of separating yourself from it.
Right.
To kind of not be so freaked out.
So the next morning, everyone was worried, including Zeb's sister, who agreed that Zeb's absence was out of character for him. And when it got to be around 3 p.m. the next day, after he went missing, there was still no sign of him, and his mom drove down to the police station to file that missing persons report. So police began investigating, but initially they just didn't really have a lot to go on. 2 days after Zeb's disappearance, though, there was a strange phone call that came into the Walmart electronics department, and it was a person claiming to be Zeb saying that he was sick and wasn't going to be able to come into work that day or that week or whatever they said you know, was the case. So one of his coworkers was named Patty, and she was who picked up the call in the electronics department. And she, of course, knew immediately she was not talking to Zeb.
Right.
And she was actually smart enough. This is back in the day.
Smart.
Yes. So she knew, I guess, that phone that she was talking on in the electronics department didn't dial out. So in order for her to – this is back in the day with Star 69.
Right.
Everybody remembers Star 69. You could immediately dial that after a phone call and find out what number the most recent call came from. So this is before having caller ID.
And this is back when people would like prank call people and do all that stuff. So if you wanted to figure out who was calling you or your crush calls you, that did not happen in my case.
No.
But if somebody was prank calling me, you dial star 69. It tells you the number of the person that just called you.
Exactly. Unless you dial star 67.
First, which blocks the call.
Which blocks it from
when you call your crush.
Yeah.
You don't want them to know. And then they can't do star 69 and call you back. I don't know any of this.
I remember all of those things from like my teenage years, or
three-way calls,
all of that.
You'd be silent on there to hear if somebody liked you. They didn't. It's
the
whole thing.
Yeah,
my self-esteem was in the garbage.
So anywho, so Patty, she knew that she couldn't dial out on this phone from the electronics department, so she kept this person who said they were
so
Zeb
smart.
On the phone. And she, like, I guess this is one of those really long corded cord phones, you know, and I've seen the ones where they have like the spiral.
Cord
and they can stretch really long. So that's what I imagined. She was like walking to another part of the store.
On a portable phone though?
She could have been.
She could that have been. Probably makes more sense instead of like a Napoleon Dynamite style phone going from room to room.
And that's what I'm picturing, like a go-go gadget.
No.
Like extension cord phone thing. Okay, so anyway, she took
this
the phone with
her.
This
was a lot longer of a description
she
than
took
it
the phone
be.
With her to another department, and where they did have a dial-out phone. And so as soon as she hung up, you know, she was like just asked questions and tried to keep this person on the line so that the phone wouldn't ring again and then she wouldn't be able to dial back the number right away. So she was able to do that and dialed star 69, found out that this found out a source for this phone call. And when they traced it back, they looked the number up or however they – I don't know if the police did it or if some – whoever – whenever they found out that it was a number, it was connected to a Volvo plant, like where they have – I guess where they make the cars.
Right.
So that's what the number came back to. So Patty called Zeb's mom. She didn't really know what to do. She called Zeb's mom just to let her know, like, listen, I got this strange phone call. I'm not sure, you know, what – if you what you want to do with this information. Well, of course, Patty was like, we're definitely need to call the police and let them know about this, and you need to talk to them and give them any information that you have or what the person said or anything like that. But she said at that moment she really did get concerned for her son's safety, because if it wasn't Zeb calling, then who was it and why were they calling, you
right.
know, his job trying to do that, and like what had they done to him or where was he? What do they know about him, you know,
right.
and his
why are
whereabouts?
They trying to cover it.
Right, exactly. So she called the police immediately, and the rumor kind of started going around Walmart, because now keep in mind, Jason also worked there with Zeb, his friend Jason, that he was going to meet that night. And so everybody who worked there kind of knew both of them. They had seen them both together that night. And it just so happens that some of the coworkers from Walmart had known from previous conversations with Jason that he also worked for Volvo. And so they were like, well, that's kind of, you know, as they start piecing things together, you know, people talk in a workplace. And I think it kind of was one of those things that kind of developed, like the realization developed over time that, oh, well, that's kind of convenient that he was the last one that we saw Zeb leaving with. And we got this phone call from this number. And it just so happens that this guy works there too. So they kind of were able to give that information to police. And I think that kind of helped things along a little bit with the case.
Sure.
That was kind of like a big deal, a big break for them.
So at this point, police immediately take action. They went to find Jason and question him about the phone call to Zeb's place of employment. When asked why he called and pretended to be Zeb, Jason told police that Zeb had asked him to. Police then began to press him for details about January 2nd, the day Zeb was last seen. They knew that Zeb clocked out at Walmart just after 9 p.m. and was seen leaving the store with Jason. Jason tells police the story of that night and how Zeb had gotten a page and appeared agitated and frantic before bailing on the trip to look at the car. He told officers about how Zeb had rear-ended his truck, but that he had agreed to handle it later, and that then Zeb drove off. Police began checking into Jason's story and learned that he had called into work late the next day after Zeb had disappeared. They also discovered that he was apparently involved in another car accident, different from Zeb's rear-ending. No accident report was ever filed, despite Jason claiming to have sustained a cracked rib and a head injury in the second accident. Police were immediately suspicious of Jason being involved in two separate accidents. When they checked his truck, there was minimal damage. Police thought that Jason's behavior was odd, and they began to consider him a suspect in Zeb's strange disappearance.
So all of this kind of starts getting weird from this point. I would say that, Zeb having the page and everything was weird, but then things just continued to get more weird after this. And so for the whole thing that he got in this accident with Zeb rear-ended him, and then he also had this other second accident, I guess I didn't really see anything in my research, though. Did anyone even look into, like, was the story about him Zeb rear-ending him even true? Like, they said that his truck had minimal damage. I didn't recall seeing anything that said Zeb's car had front-end damage when they found it, eventually later on down the story. But I don't know. Like, I guess they were just taking Jason's word that that happened.
Yeah.
And, or maybe that was just a cover story. I don't really know. It just seems weird to me that he...
But what would be the point of that? Even if... that's what doesn't make sense to me. Like, why would you say that? Doesn't seem like a very important part of the story that he rear-ended you if he didn't rear-end you.
If that's not true, I know.
And if he already got in another accident, that would explain why his truck was messed up. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, none of that.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Doesn't
make a lot of sense.
We're not investigators here,
people. No, we're sure not. Jason wasn't the only friend of Zeb's under police scrutiny. They had also learned of another person who had become very close to Zeb in recent weeks. This was a girl named Misty, and Zeb had taken a liking to her. They met at a Christmas party about a month prior, and although Misty downplayed their relationship to police, Zeb's friends and family said that he was absolutely infatuated with her. His sister said she thought it may have even risen to the level of love, being in love with her, and he just really thought highly of her and wanted more of a relationship with her, according to his friends and family, from him gushing to them about what a great person he felt like she was and that he wanted to spend more of his time with her. So that's the impression that he gave to friends and family. So Misty told police that they were just acquaintances.
Right.
They didn't really have a relationship to that level. However, that could have been because Misty had a boyfriend and a baby at the time. So, of course, she's not going to be like, yeah, me and Zeb have been – getting really close and, you know, because she of course has to like save face, you know, in some way. Now she has her, this boyfriend, you know, who's could potentially find out about any kind of relationship she had with another guy. So I can kind of see why she would downplay their relationship a little bit, but that is an important thing to keep note of. So when Misty's boyfriend, whose name was Wesley, got wind of the relationship between Misty and Zeb, he of course was angry. But Zeb and Misty kept talking in secret anyways. They would do the Star 67 phone calls and the, you know, hide the numbers and still be contacting each other back and forth, paging each other or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know how it worked in 2000, clearly.
No. AOL Instant Messenger, lots of...
Yeah, AIM.
Yeah, AIM. Lots of thinking about my boo away messages. Yeah.
It's sunny and beautiful outside, which means I want to be out there. And while I can't just leave the house to vacay at a moment's notice, I sure can pretend. Welcome to the fabulous universe of June Parker's escapades in June's Journey. Forget about packing your bags. We're taking you on a roller coaster without a passport. Say goodbye to the mundane and get ready to dive into a whirlwind of drama and elegance with our leading lady, June Parker.
Whether you're itching for a juicy mystery or just desperate for a break from the daily grind, June's Journey is your ticket to excitement. Follow June as she unravels family secrets and tiptoes through the tangled mess of her sister's demise. It's like crashing a fancy party, minus the small talk about the weather. Although, we secretly love that too.
So dust off your virtual flapper dress and buckle up for a wild ride where every corner holds a clue and every twist keeps you on the edge of your seat. But hold on to your pearls. June's Journey isn't your average mobile game. I'm knee-deep in the fifth chapter, and trust me, it's more fun than a barrel of monkeys. With stunning scenery and catchy tunes, this game oozes sophistication and class. Don't waste another second. Jump into June's world and let the adventure begin.
Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
So 2 days before New Year's, Misty stopped communicating with Zeb entirely. When Zeb kind of started getting worried and he called to check on her, well, he forgot to dial star 67 to block his number. So that was a rule he had always kept for himself to avoid being caught by Misty's boyfriend, all that. So Zeb was scared. He hung up the phone, but he knew that he had like messed up and that it would – he was worried about what might happen if Wesley found out that he was trying to get in touch with Misty.
Right.
So he had even expressed that to his parent, his grandma and his mom basically had said, you know, I made a mistake. I accidentally called her and didn't block the number, and even told them that he was kind of scared of what might happen.
Yeah.
So, but the reason he was is because Zeb had told them that Misty's boyfriend was not the nicest person.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the dynamic was with that relationship, but because of that, Zeb was concerned about what Wesley might do.
Right.
If he found out about this. Yeah. Relationship or friendship or whatever you want to call it.
The more kind of like we heard about Zeb and his family and just kind of really about him mostly, at first I was like, why are you messing with a girl that has a boyfriend? But I really truly in my heart of hearts feel like this girl was nice to him.
Yeah.
On some level, and he may have created it in his head to be more than it was, but it was somebody that was nice to him. They talked a lot in what we read that he didn't really have any friends. So if he has somebody showing attention to him, he's not this creepy, terrible guy that's trying to break up a family. I think he just finally finds somebody who's nice to him, which
right.
just breaks my heart.
I know.
I'm not about a like homewrecker situation whatsoever, but I can see how this would happen and he would just like latch on to somebody that's nice to him.
Yeah.
Police were hesitant to believe Misty's story that she and Zeb were merely acquaintances. And when they asked where she was the night Zeb was last seen, Missy told them she was at home with her boyfriend's parents and a woman named Ina, who was going to be starting a business with Misty's mother. Perhaps the strangest and most coincidental piece of information is that Ina just so happened to be Zeb's paternal aunt. So Zeb really didn't ever have a relationship with right. his father from the time he was pretty small. So it's small town. You just don't – people are always connected. If you have ever lived in a small town, you're always with somebody's relative that you know. It's just kind of how –
it is
works.
Just interesting, though,
very
that
interesting.
Out of all the people that Misty's mother could have been starting a business with, it just so happened to be the aunt of Zeb. And right. so that is kind of strange circumstances, if you ask me. And then especially because he didn't have a relationship really with – he was kind of estranged from his father's side and, you know, of course knew that his aunt lived in town. But it's right. not someone who he had a lot of contact with or right. would go and meet up with and see a lot or anything of that nature.
It's an interesting person to have your alibi from.
Right.
Yes. That closely related to the situation. When police questioned Wesley, he confirmed that he was at Misty's parents' house that night, and while the two had a solid alibi, police still considered them persons of interest.
Well, as we know from other cases, you don't always have to be there. Remember, there was another case that we did, Kelly Clayton.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a solid alibi, too, the husband.
He's there.
Mm-hmm. You know, he had – people saw him at the poker game or at other places yeah. where, you know, whenever something happened to her. So just because – you have a solid alibi, it doesn't always mean that you're not involved. If you have just because you have an alibi for that time period.
Right.
You know.
And vice versa. Sometimes it does mean that you have a solid alibi and you're
and
not you're involved.
Free and clear.
Yeah, there
yeah.
you go.
Yeah. No, but I mean, just for detective work or sake of that.
Yeah,
they,
yeah.
You know, they can't rule it out just because someone's like, yeah, she was having dinner at my house. Like,
yeah.
That doesn't mean that you're just off the hook.
Yeah.
You know?
Which I'm screwed if people ever need an alibi because what's my excuse? I'm at home. What's my next
and
thing?
Who can vouch
I'm
for me?
Home.
An 8-year-old and a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
yeah.
Come on. And they'll probably lie and say I wasn't even there.
Yeah. So as part of their investigation, police looked into the mysterious page that Zeb had received that evening. They learned that the page came from his aunt's house. Mysteriously, the same aunt that was at Misty's parents' house that night.
Right.
So as I said, this is very odd because he didn't have a close relationship with his aunt. Typically, there would be absolutely no reason why she would be paging him or needing to get a hold of him. So that was something that kind of raised some questions for a lot of people. I think even Zeb's mom and family.
Right.
Like, why was she paging Zeb? What was it that, you know, and then according to Jason, that Zeb was really agitated when he came back right. after learning of this page. And so what was said to him whenever he called back the number, you know, what was it that Zeb thought he was going to go be doing.
Right.
Where did he think he was going? Why was he having to leave what he was doing and go do
yeah.
that? Did, you know, I would love to know what was told to Zeb in
right.
that, you know, in that phone call and what was the reason for that page. So when police questioned Ina about the page, she of course said that she did not page Zeb. She told police that she had been at Misty's parents' house that night with Misty and Wesley, just as they had all said. But in another strange twist, Ina later filed a police report alleging that her home had been broken into that same night. She reported that nothing was missing except her pager and some photo frames were disturbed and nothing was stolen.
Nobody's taken a photo frame.
No, very strange. So police were running out of avenues to go down, and Zeb's mother continued to go to work as a nurse in the local hospital. So one night, while working her shift, she got a call from someone within the hospital that worked down in the medical records department. It was a young girl who had known Zeb, or at least known of him, knew who he was, and she told Denise that on her way into work that day, she had seen Zeb's car, or what she thought was Zeb's car, in the parking lot of a barbecue joint called the Little Pigs, and it was just right across the street, or right very in close proximity to the hospital where Zeb's mother worked.
I'm not a vegetarian, but the barbecue name Little Pigs seems it's a turn little, off.
I have to admit.
It's a little rough for me. It's a turn and slather off. Some pigs and feed them to me, but don't tell me I'm eating a pig. So things get even more bizarre when police arrive to find Zeb's Mazda Protege parked in a very conspicuous location near the street. There was a drawing of lips on the back window that appeared to have been done in lipstick, and inside the vehicle was a live black puppy. The headlights were on and the vehicle's windows were cracked. Police also found a hotel key card in the car, but after an exhaustive search, they were unable to identify the hotel that it came from.
This is what? So weird. If anything about the story I have to pick as the weirdest, I have to say that the circumstances that his vehicle were found are the weirdest part of this case. The lips on the back window, I honestly have no explanation for. The puppy, even weirder. Yeah. I just don't even know where you'd even start with that. And I had read a lot of different conflicting things. I had read on a few sources, they said that his car was found 2 weeks after he went missing. But then on a couple of other sources, they had said that his vehicle was found on January 6th, 2000, which was just four days later.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly clear on when the vehicle was found. It was either 4 days later or 2 weeks later, which is a huge difference, I know. But honestly, I've read multiple sources that say both. So I'm not really sure. But
somebody obviously wanted them to find this vehicle with lights on, with a dog parked, you know, dog in the car. Then somebody's going to want to save the dog. The lipstick thing is
so confusing. I don't get it. I do not get it.
But also I wonder if you, like, it's one of those things where could you be, I don't know, like, it makes it seem like it could be a girl, but also it almost seems like you could be framing a girl at the same time because it just seems so obvious. Like, why would a girl do that? Why would you ruin good lipstick for starters?
I just don't get the lips. What do they mean? It has to mean something.
But that's where I'm thinking, like, if somebody's trying to frame somebody else and they're using lipstick, then you're thinking, you see lipstick, you typically think girl. And so, oh, well, then a girl had to do with this. Meanwhile, a guy's getting away with it because you're now turning your attention to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, but I don't think police are that, like, easily, like, confused. Like, oh, well, must be a female. There's lipstick
case
on the window.
Let's go eat at the Little Pigs.
Are you ready to revolutionize the way you enjoy food and essentials at home? Introducing Dash Pass from DoorDash, your ultimate ticket to convenience and savings. With Dash Pass, you gain exclusive access to unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders, along with members-only deals and discounts that will leave your wallet smiling. Whether you're craving the flavors of your favorite restaurants, need groceries from across town, or anything in between, Dash Pass ensures that everything you need is just a few clicks away, delivered right to your door. With Dash Pass, not only do you enjoy $0 delivery fees, but you'll also benefit from lower service fees on eligible orders, making it the most affordable way to satisfy your cravings and stock up on essentials from your local favorites. What I really love is how quickly Dash Pass pays for itself. On average, it takes just two orders, which makes it a no-brainer investment for your budget. And as if that weren't enough, Dash Pass grants you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, adding an extra layer of excitement to your DoorDash experience. You get all this for only $9.99 a month, which is a small price to pay for unlimited convenience and savings. My family and I have had DoorDash for the past year or so, and while I make most meals at home, I don't know that I could mom without it. I used it twice just this past week while we were dealing with a stomach bug at home, and it was so nice to have and to be able to focus on getting better and not running all over town to pick everything up for everyone. Don't wait. Sign up for DashPass now and unlock a world of possibilities, all from the comfort of your home. DashPass from DoorDash, delivering joy, convenience, and savings straight to your doorstep.
Get more from delivery for less with DashPass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for DashPass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today, only on DoorDash, and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
A week after Zeb's car was found, a couple contacted the police claiming that they had seen the vehicle in the downtown Asheville area before it was found in the parking lot. The couple was brought in for an interview. A sketch artist worked with them to get an idea of who they saw driving the car. The sketch bore a striking resemblance to Misty, although some may argue that the sketch artist already knew of Misty and her appearance, and that could have persuaded her sketch.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I think that's a good, that's a valid point. Because that was one of the arguments I had come across that people were like, well, sure, they already knew what Misty looked like, so how do we know?
Are they saying from, like, the news they already knew what she looked like?
Well, I guess just people involved in the investigation had either met up with her or they knew who she was or...
Oh, and you names know what have I been mean? Out and stuff, and so it'd be very easy to describe somebody that's a person of interest.
And then you that just draw sense. This person that you've already seen before. You know what I mean? So
100%. If you literally showed me any picture after I saw somebody else, I would describe that person.
That's them, yeah.
I would be exactly. No
I know. So months passed with no new developments, and Zeb's case went cold, leaving his family with countless questions and very few answers. Detectives attempted to track down the origin of the puppy found in the car, but were unable to verify a source. One of the detectives on the case eventually adopted the puppy, and one thing that I found interesting and really smart is that the detective had the dog's DNA preserved, and he said that because even though, you know, of course the dog's not going to live forever, won't be around forever, but they don't know if that dog's DNA may be the thing that kind of ties the case together one day,
right?
Whether they find that same DNA in a certain location or, you know, it's a puppy. So if it like shedded its hair anywhere, I mean, it's totally feasible and possible that it could, you know, you could find more information because of the dog's like DNA that was left somewhere or something along those lines.
Think of people who, you know, investigators 40 years ago who saved like pants and
how did they know
stuff. I know
it I blows always it blows minds. My mind I'm like how do they even know to save that because obviously they knew that they didn't have the technology at the time but how do they know
like there that somebody could be
so super, crazy super smart. So in the fall of 2001 Jason Owens resurfaced. Police had attempted to pull him over in a routine traffic stop and Jason sped off and fled, sending the police on a high-speed chase.
Genius.
Yes, that never goes well. So at some point in this pursuit, Jason fired a shot out the window in the direction of the police car that was on his tracks. And he was arrested and sentenced to 4 years for charges related to that incident. And I thought that was very bizarre because a gun was involved. So I don't know what the laws are like or were like back in 2000 in North Carolina. But here in Florida, if you pull out a gun, that's automatic 10 years. If you fire a gun, even if you don't kill somebody, that's 20. And then if you actually...
Life.
And then it's life.
We've learned about 10, 20 life forever. Since we were born.
Right. So, like, you can't just pull out a gun and start shooting at a police officer here in Florida and get 4 years.
No.
Like, that's not going to happen. You're going to be in the slammer for a lot longer.
The slammer.
I just wanted to say that. The slammer.
I'm glad you got that out.
I did.
So Jason was interviewed numerous times over the years and was always considered a person of interest, but police had nothing solid to tie him to Zeb's disappearance. He's always maintained his story of that night and claims to have no idea what happened to Zeb after he received a strange page and left that night. In 2007, Jason was sentenced to 6 weeks for charges of drunken disorderly and resisting officer. He was charged with habitual impaired driving, which is a felony, and sentenced up to 2 years. In the same year, a warrant was issued for ground-piercing radar searches on his property, but those searches turned up no results. In 2008, he appeared in court again on yet another charge of evading police due to drunk driving.
Goodness. That's all he did. He just drove drunk and ran away from the cops.
Man, this guy needed Uber, but Uber was not invented yet. This should be where the story ends, but unfortunately, there's more. Jason found himself in yet another huge scandal when Christy Codd and her husband Joseph were reported missing on March 15th, 2005.
So Christy was known for her appearance on The Next Food Network Star. Were you a fan of that one?
No, cooking shows don't really do it for me. There's not enough drama. But I think she was actually related to a country singer as well, because her country singer that I hadn't heard of was like very behind trying to find out who did this to her.
Okay.
I'm going to consult Google while Mandy talks.
Okay. So Christy was 5 months pregnant at the time that she was reported missing. Well, as it turned out, Jason Owens was the couple's handyman, and when police questioned him about their disappearance, he stated that he had accidentally run them over with his car and panicked, and apparently, according to what he told police, he tried to take Christy inside and give her life-saving measures, you know, CPR and all of that, and but he also said that the husband, Joseph, was just too far gone. He was already going to die, so he did not try to render aid to him. But that's the story that he went with and told police. So he further told police that because he knew he was not supposed to be driving due to previous convictions, he panicked and tried to dispose of their bodies rather than just calling for an ambulance or for help. So this is extremely disturbing. He burned Joseph's body in a wood stove, and the next day he returned to the Cod residence and dismembered Christy's body before placing it in the wood stove also to be burned to dispose of her remains.
Over running them over? That's like an easy call. You've already gone to
jail
5,000
times. If you even believe
that
story.
I know. But you've already gone to jail 5,000 times for driving.
Yeah. I don't know.
Dismembering somebody?
Right. That goes a little bit beyond, like, I had an accident and I hit somebody with my car.
Well, and isn't it really bizarre that you would just admit to this stuff so freely? Like, if they don't have anything on you and you're just admitting to
it? Well, I mean, I don't know how much persuading it took for them to get like any of this information. I don't know if he just sat right down.
Was like, was just like, I have a story to tell you.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he tried to cover it up at least as much as he could get away with, but you can't. Eventually, they're going to ask you all the questions they need, like, answers to. And
right.
You're probably going to tell them.
For the record, I think it was a different person whose country star cousin was murdered, or vice versa. It was a different country star who had her cousin murdered.
All I knew is the Food Network thing.
Yeah, Food Network.
Some of you may have known about her from there. But yeah, same guy, Jason Owens. So following the couple's deaths, Jason sold the couple's belongings and sent texts from their phones alleging that they were sick to buy himself more time before people began asking questions. So clearly he is – that sounds very similar to what he did in Zeb's disappearance. He
allegedly
called his job and, you know, said he was sick and
– yeah.
You know,
covering
all of
tracks.
That, covering his tracks. So it definitely does make you wonder, what are the chances that somebody who was such a key player in Zeb Quinn's disappearance turns up for murdering a couple, like, years down the road?
Yeah.
That's just, you know what I mean? It's crazy luck that guy has, huh?
Yeah.
Like, I mean.
Is that what we're calling it? Well, one thing I had read about when they were talking about motive for murder, really, for either of these things, is like, if Zeb did have money on him the night he was going to look for a car, he may have been carrying cash on him.
But how much is it really going to be? He's 18 years old and he's going to buy a used car. It's not going to be enough money to kill someone over.
Many people have killed people for like a burger, and depending on the day, I understand. But no, but people kill for all kinds of reasons. If you have something that I want, not me particularly, and you don't have anything I want, we're both in the same crappy boat, but people kill over that kind of thing. It's not a number amount, really.
I guess that for me, the hardest part, and like, this is why this case is super fascinating, and I go down rabbit holes anytime I get into cases of disappearances or anything. I really do get really invested in those, especially ones with strange circumstances.
Yeah.
And so all of it is just so weird to me to think, like, how is the aunt involved in this? Like, supposedly her house got broken into, but the page definitely came from her number. Does she know more? Was she involved? Was the Misty involved in her boyfriend? Or was this all Jason who had this plan and did something to Zeb? And then these are all teenagers. How has there been no discoveries? How have they not found anything? No clues, nothing to lead, you know, lead them to Zeb, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
They're 18. I couldn't have pulled off something like that at 18 and done it well enough to get away with it. Like, what happened? Like, it just drives me crazy. I just want to know what happened. You know, what happened after he drove off that night? And was that really the last time Jason saw him? And, yeah, like, is that true? Like, I just wish I knew everything.
Well, typically in these kind of cases, you have, say you even have two suspects. One of them makes a whole lot of sense and the other one's like, they were in the same town at the same time, but nothing else. You know what I mean? Like, there's not some huge motive or anything like that. But here you have two separate suspects and they both kind of make a lot of sense. Whether, obviously, it's only one or the other, but it's kind of scary because do they have the right person? Is the wrong person still out? Like, you just don't know. So you want for the family not to have I mean, you want closure, but we know that's not really possible if you've lost a loved one. But you want them to have some kind of an answer. And who knows if they'll ever have an answer. And the thing that broke my heart with this case so much, like the whole time we watched an investigation discovery that was on that, and I'll link to that in the show notes. But it just seemed like he was a really trusting kid who really just loved people and wanted to fit in and all that stuff. And as like on the mom side of things, totally breaks my heart. Like, oh, yeah. It's more than my heart can take, this whole story about him. So I really hope the family gets answers and whoever should be in jail is in jail. And yeah, this is a bummer. Jason Owens was sentenced to up to 74 years in prison for the murder of the Codd couple. In June 2015, detectives on the Zeb Quinn case announced that they had uncovered new evidence that may be related to the case. In a search of Jason's property, they located fabric, leather materials, and unknown hard fragments under a concrete fish pond. They also found numerous bags of pulverized lime or powdered mortar mix. Officials did not confirm whether the hard fragments found were human remains or if they believed they were Zeb's remains, stating that the investigation was still ongoing.
I honestly cannot wait to find out the resolution of that because, yeah, obviously they haven't released that yet. Like they said, it's still ongoing, although that was in 2015, but there wasn't any more recent updates that, yeah, that I could find out there. So we still don't know what it was that they found, or if they knew, they're not saying. They could be putting a case together against Jason with some of that evidence that, yeah, they found. So I don't know. I hope. You don't ever want to say like that you hope that that's what it was, but on some level you do. This poor family has gone through nearly 20 years now and not had a clue what happened to Zeb. So like you said, it would almost be – I feel like knowing one way or the other is better than not knowing.
Yeah.
You know?
Ultimately, you want the best. You want him, right, to be living on an island somewhere and he's really, really happy and he has his great family and his life is all perfect and, right, he won the lottery and just couldn't share it. That's what you want it to be. But realistically, that might not be the case. And so the family really does have to prepare themselves for it being something not so great. But then if you know,
right,
you kind of know how to grieve, for lack, right, of a better word. Like, are you grieving for somebody that's missing or are you grieving because you've lost somebody? I don't know. As I can't even talk about being a mom in that situation
because, no,
that's too, too hard. But man, my heart went out to her the whole time, like listening to her and
Can't imagine living though that has got to be torturous to like just to wake up every day and just not know. You just don't know. And I would have so many questions and I am not even close to this case and I still have so many questions and still just want to know what happened, you know, what happened the rest of that night. I want to know what happened and who is responsible and, you know.
I'm going to try and say this part without crying, and I don't know if I can, but one of the hardest things for me to hear was when the mom said, when people ask me how many kids I have,
oh my gosh,
I always hesitate because I have two, but if I say two and I can't say where the other one is, like, you know, I have to explain it.
And that brings opens it all yourself up. Yeah.
Exactly. And, yeah, so, but, you know, you don't want to deny you have this other child and just, oh, I never even thought of that,
right,
like how difficult that has to be. So, again, my heart goes out to that woman, and I hope they get answers for their family. So thanks for listening and being bummed out with us.
Yeah, this is a really sad one, but we'll definitely update if any updates come available.
Yeah,
we'll
for
post
sure
about them or talk about them.
Thanks for listening to our episode on Zeb Quinn. We'll be back next week for a new episode. Not sure what we're covering, but you'll find out in a week. Have a great week, guys.
Bye.
Hey, it's Jody from the Reality TV Podcast, your source for smart and snarky reality TV recaps. Let me be your inner voice as we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. From Bravo, WeTV to TLC, MTV to Lifetime, and even those documentaries that we love on Netflix. I watch it all and break down all the fine details that have you screaming and crying in laughter. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or your favorite podcast app by searching Reality TV Podcast. Join the Reality TV Podcast Orchard of Snark on Facebook, and on Instagram and Twitter, I'm at Reality TV Pod. Can't wait to meet you and laugh with you soon.
Thanks so much for listening to the Moms of Murder podcast. Make sure to check back with us next week for a new episode. You can also find us at momsandmurder.com, where you can connect with us via social media. Please make sure you subscribe and give us 5 stars, because giving us 4 stars would be a crime. Thanks so much.